morning, everyone. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Tech Show. My name is Todd Cochran. And of course, if you want to reach out to the show, it's real easy to do so by, you can email me here, geeknews@gmail.com, or you can call me on the hotline 24 hours a day at 619-342-7365 on Twitter at geeknews. Of course, I want to welcome two guests to the show today. We've got Addy calling in from the UK. Up on top. Good morning, Addy. How are you today?
Well, it's a good afternoon to all of you out there from London, UK. And I'm feeling good, a little nervous, being my second podcast I've ever guested on. That being said, I'm feeling good, raring to go and ready to do some serious talking.
And of course, we've got Rob Greenlee on the bottom. Good morning, Rob. How are you this morning?
Good, Todd. It's a sunny day here in Seattle, and things are looking very spring-like, I must say. So happy to be here.
Well, I tell you, I just got back from Indianapolis, Indiana, and Indy's a kind of a fun town. I was down in Bloomington for a few days. Of course, that's a college town, and flew back yesterday, and quite frankly, I'm kind of reverse jet-lagged. It was a short week, but I'm only going to be home this until Thursday, then I'm heading out to NAB. I'm going to be out there until next week, Thursday. So I'm going to be out there about 5 or 6 days. I'm looking forward to going out and seeing what's new in the, I guess, professional broadcast space. So, but Addy, you do a show of your own, don't you?
Yes, I do. I do the a show called MHF Tech. If it's on Blueberry. techpodcast.com. And of course, what else is going on in that one? You can find, if you go over to mhftech.net, you can find links to our downloads. We're going to be moving our show notes over to that place soon. And also you'll find links to subscribe to our show on iTunes. So if you haven't done so, go ahead, subscribe to make sure you get your regular tech fix.
That's great. With a little bit of a UK spin, I think, too, yeah?
Yes, indeed. In fact, how can I put this? This is actually the first time I've been on Saturday Morning Tech myself. But in any case, what say we get things rolling?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Rob, you know, when I landed in Honolulu yesterday, first thing you do is you pull open the iPhone and you start checking your email, and I saw your Facebook posting on CNET essentially saying we're canceling a whole bunch of our shows, we're going to rework them, and essentially, and I'm completely confused on what they're doing here, but they're walking away from distributing their content via podcast. Are they actually not going to have shows that are going to be distributed via RSS feed, but they're going to distribute other places?
Well, essentially, they're going to have just a couple of podcast shows that are going to continue. The 404 and the Reporters Roundtable are the two shows that are going to continue as podcasts. But they basically have walked completely away from live programming, and all of their shows, and they're doing a complete revamp of all of their shows and how they produce content. So it's going to be more of an on-demand concept, which means that really that's code for it's going all streaming, and all these shows are going to go into apps. But that's not what they came out and said in this article, but that's what I've been able to gather by talking to people down at CNET, and it's really just a change in their overall strategy based on the popularity of apps and streaming. They haven't been successful in being able to monetize the whole kind of podcast and download part, right? So
why didn't they call me?
Yeah, well, I know. I mean, it's
I
know it's not a very good reason for why they're making this shift, but nonetheless, that's what happened. And it's not an uncommon experience for larger media companies to have had this experience with podcasting, where they've tried to kind of, I would say, kind of, not a full effort in trying to figure out how to make money from podcasts. I think it's always been kind of left on the sidelines. It hasn't been their primary focus. And then, you know, when things kind of come down to making a decision about cutting back, you know, for whatever reason, it could be one of the first things to go, because it hasn't been easy for them to make it successful.
Well, the question then is, you know, are they really, okay, so they're going to go to apps. In other words, an iPhone app or an Android app, they're going to put their content there. You know, have they seen the stats on how media is being consumed in apps? It's pretty bad.
Can I have my two cents on this one?
Sure.
Well, I personally think that I'm not meaning to bash anyone at CNET. I'm not trying to say anything bad. But it's just really, really a bad thing, in my opinion, to go away from distributing through podcasts, because, you know, people like to, and this is in my opinion, to, you know, download stuff through your usual podcatchers such as iTunes. In fact, you've seen how many millions of people are using iTunes, Blueberry, Miro, the Zune marketplace for their podcasts. They're just going to lose a bunch of listeners really fast. Sorry. I'm just saying. I'm just putting that one out there.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think what it is too is I don't understand their strategy, Rob, because, you know, it really is a micro step. If they're going to create the content, you know, it's a micro step to make the, you know, if you're posting it already on a blog and you're going to put it up on a website and you're going to put it up on YouTube, if you're putting it up on the blog, it's automatic. It's already in the feed. What's the, you know, what's the difference? I guess I don't understand. They say, you know, in the write-up, they said they want to have people do on-demand. Okay, so if they're not doing live, they're going to do recorded. And this is basically, they would be doing like what we're doing right now, but they wouldn't be live. They would just be recording in a studio. They're going to edit that. They're going to put it up. Then they're going to make a video on demand, being that it's, you know, that's last time I checked, since about 2004, that's really what podcasting's been, is audio or video on demand. I guess I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, I also heard that what they're going to do also is really focus on going back to email newsletters as their path for for making this content available. Seriously, that's what I heard was what was a big part of their strategy, was to have people sign up for newsletters, which is really funny, because that's what CNET's strategy was for distributing their spoken word content back in, I think it was 2002.
I guess so, enough people have gotten fired that they've forgotten their own lessons.
Yeah. Well, I think it's probably is safe to say that there's a lot of new people there, and there's been a lot more kind of CBS people that have taken over.
Right.
For prior people that were more kind of tech folks. So it's more of a broadcast, you know, it's owned by CBS. And that's how they're looking at it, is more of a broadcast model is kind of where it seems like it's going.
Well, the harder they make their content to get, the better for me, because that means people are going to come looking for content in other places. It's kind of just a weird thing. And I guess we'll have to see where they go as they move forward. But, you know, ever since Tom left and went to Twit, they've went downhill pretty much since then anyway.
Yeah.
Well, and I think,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, I think what we're going to probably see happen is that they're going to take this strategy forward here. You know, it's going to really start to roll out here, you know, over the next 2 to 3 months. And then I think that there's going to be a lot of pushback on making it podcasts again. And I think you'll slowly see it probably wind up going back to that again, would be my guess. So.
And Addy, what were you going to say?
You know, I think they should actually follow the example of Twit. You know, sometimes if you watch some of their shows, I think Leo Laporte has said that they quote unquote do the TiVoing for you, so that, you know, you don't have to worry about catching it live. Because essentially what I suggest they do is this: A, have a live video feed so they have people, or live audio feed, so if people want to watch shows live, they can.
But they have had. Of course, yes. They've had that, though. They've had that album.
Yeah, and they're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, they've said they're done. They're done with live.
Yeah. I mean, because...
But at least, you know... Sorry to interrupt this, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, at least what they can do is, you know, keep on continuing to distribute their podcasts through the regular iTunes podcatchers and other podcatchers out there, so that at least they appease some of the masses who want to download their podcast through a, you know, what is a more appreciated way of doing that. Because at the end of the day, people don't care whether how they get it. So as long as they are able to download their shows, they're happy.
Well, yeah. they've decided, you know, in this announcement that they're not going to do that anymore because they feel that YouTube and where else did they say, Rob? Oh, set-top boxes and apps were the places where the media should go. And which is funny is most of those systems require an RSS feed to be ingested.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, so YouTube obviously doesn't. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be really simple for them to turn these shows back on again as podcasts at some point down the line. And I think that that's probably going to happen. I think that this is probably it's a change in strategy, but really it's not necessarily. I mean, it's not necessarily a bad strategy that they're going into apps on TV sets and those kind of things. And I think that's probably okay. It's just that, you know, I've heard a lot of people push back on it saying, well, why can't they do both? Right. I mean, it's not like it's an either or situation. I mean, you go to where your audience is and they have a huge audience on the podcasting side and they're basically walking away from that. And that's not necessarily.
Do you think it's also
really good?
Do you think it's also a mindset that they think they can get advertisers if they are doing it a different way? Do you think this is a mind shift and just a wording game by them?
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think it's easier, right, Todd, to run ads against streaming content than it is against podcasts, right? I mean,
But Rob, it's the same thing.
No, but think about CNET and how they do their shows. It's these looped kind of playback scenarios where they drop in an ad. You know, it's an automated kind of thing, and it's not like a Leo or what you do or anything like that, where it's a live read, which is where the successful models are now today. And these larger media companies have not been willing to shift to these models that actually work, is really what it comes down to.
You know, I think too, what I'm seeing is I'm getting, you know, requests every day from companies saying, hey, we want to put advertising pre-roll, post-roll into your Roku feed, your Boxy feed, your Samsung's, you know, all this. And then I'm getting huge pressure by these companies to, they want access to our content. And I keep telling them, we've already got ads in our content and I don't need you. And when they say, well, what do you mean? I said, well, the advertising's right in the content. And, you know, they kind of like, huh? And they're like, what do you mean? I said, well, I don't need you to do that. I don't need pre-roll or post-roll. And it pisses people off to have to watch an ad, you know, prior to a show starting, even though it might be, and people are getting more used to it. But if they're going to, you know, the thing though is, Rob, if they're saying video on demand, does that mean, okay, there's two ways to stream. There's, I go to their website. Oh, I want to watch the latest episode of this. And I click play on their embed on their website and it starts to play and it shows me an ad and plays, or they're using Flash Media Encoder and they're streaming stuff 24 hours a day in a loop. And I may catch a show in the middle. I doubt they're going to do that because that's live. So if they're doing videos.
It's kind of pseudo live. It's not really live. It's just, it's kind of live replay, right?
Oh, so they are going to loop stuff. Well, That's idiotic.
That's essentially reruns.
It's reruns is all it is.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what they're going to do. All their shows are going to be as pre-produced programs that are not going to be live, and there's going to be really, really high production quality to these things. So if you've ever seen the videos that are done on The Verge, I would say that's a good example of where CNET's going. I think they saw what The Verge was doing.
So what are they doing?
And they are making these videos that are really, really highly polished and highly produced, shows.
Right.
I mean, and that the quality bar has been upped, right? These shows that are based on, kind of like what we're doing here, where it's a video of people talking on mics.
Right.
What they're doing is trying to make their shows more like, what The Verge is doing, which is it's more like TV, right?
Right, right.
Well, it's more like Dignation or something like that.
Yeah, potentially. And the thing is, though, Dignation from a quality standpoint is not much different than this.
No, it's not.
It's basically, guys talking like we are now with different personalities, obviously. But, if you look at where we're at in the playback technology and the ads, it's very simple at this point. And even Spitballs is saying in the thing, we need something, but it's already there. It's very easy to do an ad overlay on video that's playing. There's easy to put it midstream. Even on the Roku, you can put an ad midway through content and actually do an interstitial. So it's not to put ads into the content live or streamed is not difficult. And I guess if they're willing, what it is, Rob, is they're just going at, they want to monitor it's, and you can get the, what do they call this? It's not residual. There's another word for it in the ad industry. I know what it is. Maybe it is residual market. It's basically leftover advertising that just gets dumped it's really bad. It's
really
like
cheap,
maybe a buck or two on a CPM, and it's, you can get that all day long. And there's really no performance worries. Your ad buyer's not going to call you and say this ad's not performing, because you're not getting paid the premium price. So, well, it'll be interesting to see what they do. We'll have to watch. But,
well, I think it's also an opportunity for Twit and Rev3 and the Tech Podcast Network to come in and grab some audience. Really, honestly.
And part of the problem too is, even on TPN, we got a limited number of folks over there that do video. I bang my head up against the wall, these guys need to understand that they need to be doing everything. They need to be doing video. They need to be doing audio. They need to be blogging, but a lot of these guys are just stuck. Don't get me wrong. The audio is still good and the audio has the most consumption, but the sex appeal when someone comes to a website, when they come to your website, they want to see the video. They don't want to see the audio. They'll consume the audio on the go, but it's the sex appeal of having the video up on the website to be able to watch when you roll in. So
I completely agree with you, Todd, there, but here in the UK we have a slight problem. See, here we have 10 megabit internet, which is severely traffic shaped. Get this, between 4 p.m. our time and 9 p.m., we can only download up to 750 megabytes of data before we're throttled down to 2.5 megabits a second. I'm dead serious. That's on the downside. And plus, we only get 1 measly megabit of upload.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the complete, up until probably 3 months ago, I was severely bandwidth hampered until we went to DOCSIS 3. And I think in the UK, some carriers are better than others, depending on who you're with from a service provider standpoint. But it's a challenge for people that they're, and that's where audio is, is still king in some places because of the bandwidth issues.
Yeah, but that being said, I'm sure thanks to my friend who has 50 megabits, yes, 50 megabits, I think what we will be able to is maybe go to video somewhere further down the line. I can simply just record the videos here, hand them to an external hard drive to him, and then I can say, okay, have at it, edit it down to make it nice and neat, and upload it to the web nice and fast.
Yeah, that's
crude, but it works.
And, you know, and that's fine too. You know, that's a way of getting any way to get your content up and online is good. So, you know, did you get a chance to talk to any of those folks over there at all, Rob, or did they?
Yeah. Yeah, I did actually. And, I mean, I think that I would say most of the talent there is pretty kind of not feeling that great about what's going on, but it's just, I mean, they're trying to keep a positive spin on it because they are going to be doing some new shows and they're going to be more polished and kind of some new fresh concepts, which really I think is not, I mean, it's not a bad thing for CNET to do. I think their shows were starting to get a little stale. And so I think this kind of shake up around the formats and the concepts and the polish of their shows, I think is a fantastic move for them. The only question that I have is, it gets back to where the whole concept of what we've been talking about here is how they're distributing those shows.
That's true. Well, let's switch topics here and move into some other stuff. And I pulled some stuff up that has been circulating the past 24 hours or so, or maybe even the last 36 hours. But the folks over at Radio, RDIO, and I actually have a meeting with them at NAB. They were very persistent. They wanted to make sure that I met with them Monday morning at NAB, almost said CES. But they're working on a Pandora-like radio functionality for their service. And, of course, Radio is a music subscription service. And they were founded by the folks that invented Skype. But they're going to bring on this radio-like functionality into the product. So maybe someone's gotten the scoop here. And maybe this what they want to meet with me on Monday is Mute Point. Or maybe I'll get an inside look next week. But I haven't used Radio specifically.
So are they looking to add talk programming?
Well, they didn't say that. He says, we need to get better at passive listening. So what does that, you know, what does that mean?
Passive listening.
The way I'm
that sounds like
that.
Music to me.
What were you saying,
the way
Annie?
I'm parsing.
Go ahead.
Sorry about that. The way I'm parsing that is that perhaps they are looking to add talk shows, which means, you know, if we want to have TPN on audio, then, you know, this is a golden opportunity.
He said they say their goal was to become more like Pandora. He said with the one key difference, Radio's catalog is substantially bigger than Pandora is currently offering its listeners. So, okay. So, you know, I guess I don't fully understand what the difference between passive and active listening. I guess the active listening is the stuff that they have that's live. I don't know, like XM. I don't get it. I guess we'll have to wait and find out. I haven't played with
three. I think the active one would be more around talk programming.
Yeah.
Where the passive would be more music.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to see what it is. And believe me, you know, anytime I get an opportunity to get us on an app or a channel, I do that. But we'll definitely be talking to them about that as well on next week there, Addy, for sure.
Yeah, please excuse me for mispassing that. But if that means more music kind of things, it means possibly, you know, in iTunes, I think this is one of those really unsung things that in iTunes, if you have the iTunes app on your Mac or your PC, you have this nice little radio thing down the sidebar, and then you have all these great, and I mean seriously, cool radio stations where you can find music for any genre. For example, I like my rock music and my country music. Just saying.
You know, though, I don't necessarily use...
I'd love to get that.
I don't normally use iTunes as a music listening thing. And first of all, that, you know, there's a lot better apps out there for that, and there's a lot of streaming stations. So I don't, you know, even though they've got it, I don't know how many people leave iTunes open all day long. I don't know. It's I haven't really thought of using iTunes that way. iTunes is just, for me, has always been a way to get stuff into my mobile device, not, you know, not necessarily a desktop app.
In fact, can I just actually point out something?
Sure.
In fact, this is actually something that I think is worth referencing. Do you remember the D5 conference, the All Things Digital D5 conference, where I think it was Microsoft, Bill Gates, and Steve Jobs from Apple? At the time, when Steve Jobs was asked about his thoughts on iTunes and Windows, and this is my exact quote from him, "It's like throwing a glass of ice water to somebody in hell." That's what he said about the user experience of iTunes on Windows. I'm serious.
Well, the iTunes experience on a Mac is not much better. It's the same. The software is god-awful. You know, and the thing is, they where the success of iTunes was is because everyone's carrying an iPad or an iPhone or an iPod. You know, that's where the success of iTunes comes. And believe me, it wasn't from iTunes itself. It was because of their devices that, you know, if I had a Windows... a Windows phone or an Android, I can almost guarantee I would not have iTunes loaded on my desktop. I just don't get music from them. And, you know, maybe that's just me personal, but I guess also too, if you're a Mac-centric user, that's kind of what you're stuck using. There's not, I don't know how many different apps there are besides iTunes that you can actually load on a Mac and actually get audio content. That's probably worthy of a blog post sometime, but
I think that the reason that the iTunes software also was popular is that it had the biggest collection of content. You know, it's an ecosystem that it really was leading that charge into aggregating a huge amount of podcasts and music and movies and TV and just all sorts of content that really was kind of groundbreaking. I know, you know, Zune tried to go after that, and it was a challenge for us for many years to try and ramp up and build the same kind of caliber of catalog, and we're still working on it.
Yep.
And it takes hundreds of millions of dollars and lots of deals with content providers, and Apple iTunes did that first, and they built the biggest catalog of content of, you know, across books and,
absolutely, you know,
and I think that's what really gave them the kind of leg up in the market for as long as they did. Plus, you know, they came out really with the largest portable media player platform too, with you know, the iPod. You know, Zune tried to compete with that, and it's very difficult to compete with them.
You know, I think there's been some major changes in the past couple of weeks that iTunes has made to, or Apple's done to the RSS spec. Matter of fact, it's taken longer than we thought to implement it in our PowerPress plugin, because it's the complexity of what they did is a little bit interesting. But long story short, you know, they are, and the thing is, they're going to drive changes into, you know, they're basically forcing other people to bend to their will and adapt. And if you don't, it's, you know, that it can be a challenge. So we'll see where it happens. Hey, let's switch topics. Let's talk about Windows Phone here for just a minute. There's an article over in on Computer World, of all places, and I don't get much news out of them anymore, but they say that Microsoft is investing huge amounts of money in hiring developers to write apps for Windows for other companies. The ICANN cheeseburger guy was one that Microsoft wrote an app for them, and so that people could get their cat photos. But he didn't have to, you know, he didn't have to do nothing. Microsoft did, you know, wrote the app and put it up online. I think, you know, that to me is pretty surprising that they've had to do this. And is it just, you know, are they, obviously if you can't get them to develop on their own, they've got to get something into the ecosystem.
Well, Todd, let's be really clear on what's really going on here. And that's, there's third party app developers that, the company is working with to help these other app companies to build a version of their their present apps, right, for the Windows Phone platform. So they're paying for some of the dev costs for a third party to do it, so it doesn't take away the resources that current app company has to keep expanding their other apps, right? So it's kind of a supplemental funding to make sure that these big apps get on the Windows Phone platform.
Right.
So it's really a way for them to seed the Windows Phone platform. And this is being done really, across all of the platforms, working with app developers to get apps built.
So. I know the Roku folks built a number of apps, and I don't know how many they have, but they seeded the Roku too with a large number of company apps. I think Netflix built their own, but I know the Roku team had done a number of apps initially to help, like you said, seed the app store. So anytime they want to build some apps for a tech podcast, Rob, I'd love to talk to them.
You never know.
Yeah, well, can I actually say a quickly serious point on this one? What I think this is actually Microsoft showing a sign of is desperation. They've seen how successful Android is. They've seen how many applications that iOS and Android combined have in their own marketplaces. And, this is Microsoft saying, no, please, we're here. We want you to give apps to us to put on our store as well. Please don't leave us alone. No.
Well, in all honesty, they have some catching up to do. So, yep. It's maybe money well spent.
Yeah, I don't know if the word desperation is the right word for it, but you're not far off from it. I would say it's more just like, let's kind of get real, right? I mean, if your platform doesn't have the units to scale, to monetize, spending money and building an app, there needs to be something in between, right, that helps you get there. And that's what the company's trying to do, is trying to seed getting app developers to build apps for the platform, because that's one of the key reasons that people buy into a particular platform is, what kind of content can I get? And really, apps are just another form of content.
That's true.
That's absolutely correct. In fact, in all seriousness, sorry to do my whole kind of really bad acting kind of thing there, but just to throw a little comedy in. In any case, what I guess I was trying to say was, I lost my train of thought. I guess what I was trying to say was, I've got it. I guess what I was trying to say was that, if you've got all these platforms out there, and if the platform, in this case Windows Phone, doesn't have the content before a person buys a phone, they're just going to move over to another platform. They're going to go to iOS or Android. It's that dead simple.
But here's the funny thing. From everything that I'm seeing so far, the apps are, it's the content apps. Now, of course, the games are fantastic. So what was I playing on the airplane coming back? I played a couple of games. I watched a movie, played on some more other type of apps. So you played a card game or something. But, long story short, I played stuff that really wasn't a lot of content stuff. Now, the content app that I did use on my iPhone was an app that actually allowed me to download the content and to be able to consume it, on demand and from, while I was flying and not being connected to the internet. So I think what we see, at least in our stats system for content being consumed, is I don't see a lot of apps being used for content, but I see apps being, obviously apps are being, we all use apps every day for other purposes, but are you guys actually using an app that you paid 99 cents for or gotten free to actually consume content? Are you guys,
Yeah.
Are you doing that?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think that if you really back up and look at it, most of the successful apps on any of these platforms are aggregator apps, right?
Yeah.
The YouTube, the Netflix, all those kind of apps are aggregator plays. And I think this whole concept of building apps for a particular show, I think is a bad strategy. I mean, it's not going to work on the TV, and it's not going to work on slates. People want to go to apps and use platforms that have a variety of content, not just one content.
Yeah, I've talked to many people that have spent $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 and put an app up for their content, and they're like, I might as well have just flushed the money down the toilet. It was, you know, the payback on it was, you know, was horrendous, you know. And I think you're right, Rob, but you know, you can't, you know, it's gotta be cool. You gotta be the cool kid and have your own app. And that's, you know, it's a statement, you know, but, we'll see. Anyway, let's switch topics here. AT&T, of course, Addy, you guys, have a little different situation there in the UK, but AT&T here has announced that it will begin unlocking customer iPhones once their 2-year contracts have expired. And this move will apparently free up currently locked devices to use a micro SIM from any carrier offering a network compatible with the device. Haven't we been unlocking phones for a while, irregardless of what AT&T wants? But
yes,
starting today, they're going to offer qualifying customers the ability to unlock their AT&T iPhones. So you have to be a customer in good standing. In other words, your bill has to be paid and you have to be out of a contract. And so at least this is a little bit of a waiver by AT&T. And now it looks like we're going to officially get a legal unlock from AT&T so long as you're out of a contract. Of course.
Yeah, well, actually, in the UK, the situation is different.
Of course.
As you know, in the UK, O2, you may have heard of O2.
Yeah.
They were the first carrier to have the iPhone here in the UK, right? And the situation is slightly different in terms of unlocking. They say, yes, if you want to unlock, you can unlock for people who pay on a contract. They say you can unlock right now if you want to, fill out a form and you're good to go. But you have to honor the remainder contract of your contract.
Yeah. And I think
for pay-as-you-go customers, they say that, okay, you can do the same, but if you pay us a little bit of money.
Yeah. Here, the way it's worked on at least the iPhone 4, the latest iPhone 4 rollout is, if you want an unlocked phone, you can buy it. You're just going to pay full price for the phone. And, you know, you have to, you know, and they were Apple is more than willing to sell you an unlocked iPhone. So anyway, that it's an interesting, nice move by the folks at Apple. One thing I will say is this new iPad, I don't think I get as much battery life out of it as the iPad 2. And because I was at 1% when I landed, and I hadn't used it that much. I don't think I got a full 10 hours of use out of it. Of course, I was playing games and watching movies and stuff. But it's the screen's beautiful, but it definitely doesn't have as much. I don't think it has as much battery life. Hey, Amazon S3. There was an announcement on Amazon Web Services blog. Of course, we're live streaming today at geeknewscentral.com and at live.geeknewscentral.com using an Amazon Flash Media server on EC2 and CloudFront. But on their S3, they have announced that they have 905 billion object and over 650,000 requests per second. To give you some comparison, in quarter four of 2006, they were getting, they had 2.9 billion objects, files, whatever it may be. Going to 2007 was 14, 2008, 40, 2009, 102, 2010, 262, 2011, 762 billion. And from quarter four to quarter one, they've grown 140 billion. Up to 905 billion objects. This is some pretty remarkable statistics. coming out of the Amazon team. And there's been a lot of speculation on what, you know, how big is their overall service. And, you know, I don't know how this compares to other companies that are serving up content, but 905 billion objects being stored in S3. And that means, you know, that every piece of content that's in S3 is being paid for. You know, I've got several S3 accounts with a variety of different stuff. Of course, Raw Voice has a huge, you know, our storage requirements on S3 are pretty big. It's just pretty amazing numbers.
No well, kidding. It's cloud, right? That's what's going on here, and it's only going to get bigger.
Yeah.
Well, that's all well and good. So is under one condition. So as long as it doesn't rain cats and dogs.
Sparks will fly, right?
Yeah. But it tells you that a lot of people are tying into Amazon, and it's gotten easier. Oh, we definitely got a comedian in the house today. All right.
My sense of humor definitely appeals to a very niche audience, of which I'm sure the TPN audience fits into.
Oh, gosh.
Very geeky.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm not a geek.
Over the past week, several folks have come out, and one was a reporter asking for his content that's on Mega Upload to be retained. He wants to get access to it. We've had a number of folks that have come out and said, hey, my legal content that was on Mega Upload is needs to be retained. But it's news out of CNET is that a lawyer who has helped defend YouTube against their Viacom has joined Mega Upload's defense. So they've hired a law firm, Quinn Emanuel and Urquhart and Sullivan, and also Andy Shapiro. This is huge. This is, you know, Andy Shapiro being added to this legal defense team for Mega Upload tells me that, you know, these guys are serious in defending the takedown of this website. And of course, Kim.com still faces extradition to the United States, which is a whole story in itself. But, you know, it shows me that, and of course, there came out some news last week that, you know, I think Mega Upload is going to have a shot at this. You know, where do you guys, you know, irregardless of the charges and, you know, irregardless of the politics of them trying to extradite him to the U.S., you know, do you think Mega Upload has a chance of winning this?
No,
I don't know. It's hard to say. I think this is the coming battle for, you know, where we're all moving to the cloud, right? And storing things in the cloud and sharing things in the cloud. I think it's really symptomatic of
wrong lower third
of the future battles that are just beginning here.
Well, you know, the music industry, or not the music industry, but Paramount Pictures is, I think, his, I don't know if it was a CEO or whoever it was, someone over there made a comment the other day at a conference, and he targeted like 5 additional file lockers, cyber lockers, as being, you know, they wanted the DOJ to pursue these guys. So, you know, okay, if they're going to take down Mega Upload and they're going to take down some of these other cyber file sharing lockers, well, what is S3? It's a cyber locker. It's a file. You know, it's harder to share a file on S3. But you can. You know, it's not that difficult. You can provide a direct link to that file for someone to download.
Well,
exactly.
The S3 platform is really more targeted at businesses. I think where the battle is going to be is in the cloud hosting side for, you know, everyday computer users.
But I think that, you know, I've used a variety of different file lockers to drop files off for people to be able to use, mm-hmm. you know, so it's not that I have mixed feelings about this, because if they can go after those companies, yeah. What's to stop them from going after Amazon?
Yeah, well, you know, with this whole Mega Upload thing, there's also RapidShare, I think, who have stopped their... you know, that you can download our stuff from us. That being said, what's to stop another company starting up In fact, another thousands of companies starting up and offering a similar server to Mega Upload. What's to stop them? Because, you know, it's going to turn into a game of whack-a-mole.
Well, it's nothing's going to stop them, but what they're trying to do is through fear and intimidation, they're trying to bring down all of those sites, and irregardless if the site has a, okay, there's always going to be a rogue element. They're going to use services like that to try to distribute copyrighted content. That's going to happen. But the thing is, it's going to be, you know, there's also, if a company has a, you know, set up to, in all circumstances, let's say, you know, I started a company and my goal was to have a great cyber locker system where people could store their media and have access to it anytime, anywhere. You know, if I started that as a service, you know, and had puristic, that's what I wanted to do and it was going to be a viable business. You know, if someone came in and started using the service to distribute copyrighted content, even though I didn't want them to, I'm automatically guilty and could be, you know, as you know, the Safe Harbors Act of the DMCA has, you know, essentially been thrown out here. You know, here in the United States, if you're an internet service provider or a service provider of content, you know, you have certain provisions that you are protected under Safe Harbors Act of the DMCA. You know, same thing, there's DMCA safeguards for copyright holders on how to get content taken down as well. But if I'm no longer going to be safe from Safe Harbors, essentially what that means is any content, even today that's on Blueberry or Tech Podcast, you know, I could be hauled, I could be hauled off to jail, essentially, for hosting copyrighted content, even though it wasn't me that did it. And so does that mean as a service provider now that I'm going to have to go through and review every piece of media that's on our service? When we've had copyright,
the DMCA is broken.
Well, in a certain sense, it isn't, because I've had DMCA takedown notices sent to our legal department. Went and reviewed the piece of content that they requested to have taken down, found out it was in violation, have removed it, responded, used our acting agent to do the whole official deal, and took the content down. But the DMCA says that the burden is on the copyright holder. The burden is on me that holds the copyright to content to go to someone to take it down. The burden is not on the service provider. And, you know, I understand that with Mega Upload, we've got a whole different key circumstances here. You know, they basically got into their email. They could tell that they knew that this content was on there. So they kind of screwed themselves in the fact that the Safe Harbors Act probably does not apply because they vulnoided it themselves. But here you've got other companies that are probably working within the law and within the DMCA notice, where these companies want it to be taken down by the Department of Justice. I be honest with you, I think we're on a real slippery slope here, and sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think one of the reasons why people are turning to piracy is because of how content is, how can I say this, more, is not easily available to them. So, for example, let's just say there's an episode of, Friday Night Lights, just for example, and I wanted to watch it. And for some, we get it on Sky Atlantic, which is Rupert Murdoch's property, so to speak, and you know, let's just say 1 or 2 weeks in a row, they say, oh, and Friday Night Lights is going to be cancelled for 2 weeks. You know, I'm going to get that. That's my only legitimate way of actually watching the show, because, you know, I don't have any on-demand access to that show or any other way to get it. So, you know, what I'm going to have to do, I'm really sorry. I love supporting the people who make these shows or who make content. You know, I'm just going to have to obtain it from illegal sources, which disclosures out the way, I don't do. I'm an honest guy. I don't ever illegally download stuff. I'm a clean guy.
But I think what you're gonna, we all fully understand that, Addie, but it goes back to some conversations we've had here before, in that you're dealing with old media. They're trying to figure out how to make money with it. They've learned that they're not going to get paid as much for that content when it's digital as they would if they have this mysterious Nielsen rating that tells them what their viewer count is, and they can charge a card rate for their advertising that is simply on mind-boggling scale on how much is paid. So, you know, their model and their production model and their cost model, when translated to digital, they find out that the content's really not as worth as much as they think it is. So this has been their resentment, or their, you know, if they were making money digital, you can absolutely be guaranteed they would have all this content up and available for us all to watch and consume. They just haven't been able to figure out how to monetize it. Now, Rob, I know you wanted to say something, so I'll let you go ahead and chime in. What were you thinking?
Well, it was more about that there's kind of a, there's another piece of this story that's going on right now too. The YouTube and Viacom court case actually kind of reached a head here this week as well, and it looks like that Viacom is winning that battle, right? Where they've been able to prove that the founders of YouTube in the very early days of YouTube were very aware of the copyright infringement. And it gets back to just what you were saying, is that the current law puts the burden on the content provider to notify and to take down. But what's happened in the YouTube and Viacom case is that they've been able to prove that the founders traded emails and were fully aware of the infringing content. And so that's left open this window that the content provider has to hold the platform responsible. So it gets back, that's very similar to what you were just talking about on the other case. But so there's multiple cases going on here. And I think that the current law that we have is actually not a bad law. I think it actually does, it puts the burden in the proper place. It's just that there's an effort now to try and create a new precedent that kind of expands that to include the platforms. And so you're starting to see, you know, these platforms put up filters to take down content that's copyright infringing. I mean, it's a big technology play that's happened at, you know, a lot of these platforms to detect in the video, copyright infringing content. So that's a big thing that's happening right now.
One thing that's happening here is that, you know, I have the ability to put you guys up on the screen and it goes into the video record. So I also have the ability, if I want to go ahead and just, you know, I can patch in a screen, and, you know, just like this, I can bring up a screen and I can show you that. Well, usually, you know, that's not an issue from bringing up a screen like that. But what's happening is that now if I want to play a YouTube video or someone's piece of content, let's say we're talking about it here. Matter of fact, case in point, well, just let me go ahead and show you.
Todd's going to get us taken down.
No, I'm not going to get us taken down because I'm not going to play it. But let me show you here something that what would get something flagged. So here's a Gadget Lab article over on Wired. And okay, so I said, oh, that's cool. And let me go over here and look at the provocative glimpse into the future. So yeah, there is a YouTube video right here. Boom. I'm like, oh, man. And I watched this yesterday and I thought this would be
that was an amazing video.
This is a 2-minute and 31-second video that I want to play on this show. Even if I play 15 seconds of this video and if they hear a little bit of the background music that's being played there that they've licensed, that Google is licensed to be played on that. Soon as I hit that play button and it gets into this video stream, within 24 hours of this video being posted to YouTube, guess what? I get a copyright violation notice because I have used a snippet of that video in this show, even though it would be completely fair use. Okay, and we're talking about it. This is a news program. We're doing We're talking about technology. We're referencing it. We're putting the links to it. I would still get hit for a copyright violation. So I'm at the point now where I just cannot put any type of third-party video content into my show without getting a copyright violation. Now, it's completely bunk because here, you know, and it's not the YouTube and Google are not going to flag it. It's the owner of the music that's playing in the background that will flag as a copyright violation. And you get so many of those, and YouTube says, oh, sorry, you're no longer a partner, and you keep this up, you're going to bounce you. So I've over the past probably year have gotten maybe 4 or 5 of these notices. And it's, you know, I put in there, it's fair use. I'm, you know, we're talking about the content. And what ends up happening is the owner of the music says, well, you played the full video. That's not fair use. If you'd only played 15 seconds, we would rescind the copyright infringement. So I've gotten to the point now where I just can't put anything up. Yeah. So we've reached a level of insanity in some instances that is crazy. It really is. And so, it, you know, going back to, and, you know, we've come out a real long circle here from Mega Upload, but what we're really getting to the point of is that this thing's really broke and there's no common sense being applied. You're automatically considered to be guilty. And these filters that they put in, they don't care. The filters just say, oh, there's the algorithm for that music track. Yep. You're violating.
Well, and it's immediately just taken down. There's no, like, you know, a process that reviews it beforehand. It's just taken down immediately. Right.
In my case, yeah, my stuff wasn't like a complete. So they left it up, and I just had to respond.
Oh, did they? Oh,
yeah. Okay. So there's different levels. It's depending on where you're at.
What
now,
it is.
Yeah, yeah. And the one thing, the one of them recently was the guy was like, well, you have advertising in your show. You're a commercial show. You know, YouTube doesn't allow you to upload content into it that has advertising. I said, no, that's not true. If YouTube knows, that's fine. And that's, you know, if you are a partner and you've basically said you're going to have advertising within your content, they understand that and you have permission to do so. But it's odd. It really, really is.
You know, one of the other things that makes this really odd and just really makes me angry, I mean, I'm not angry at the moment, but it kind of does make me angry inside, is that, how can I put this? It's not only the original content owners that are flagging these things and saying, hey, that's our content. You're not allowed to put it up there. In fact, what it actually is sometimes is people, you know, thinking, oh, let's just, people like you and me, by the way, thinking, oh, let's just flag this video as copyright. And it's essentially these false claimers, right, let's put it that way, quote unquote, false claimers that are sometimes also causing these false takedowns.
Well, I had a takedown of, there's only one thing that I copyright for non-distribution every year, and it's my podcast award ceremony. It's in largely because I don't want that redistributed. I want to be able to control that and make sure that it gets the max views and my sponsors get max exposure. So we had this show that was, someone had taken some pieces of it and it was basically was using it maliciously. And I basically did a takedown notice, and they basically claimed I didn't have the right to do that. And ultimately, even I was 100% the copyright holder on it. YouTube ruled against me, even though the content was clearly flagged as being, so, you know, even as a content creator, sometimes you don't win. It's truly insane. It really is on how the process works. And unless you're a big company like Viacom or something like that, you know, even as a small content creator who's trying to protect a piece of media, sometimes you don't win. And it's, you know, it's the other side of the sequence was like, holy cow, you know, I own the copyright on that. This is mine. And then YouTube says, no, you know, parody, whatever. So, you know, long story short, I lost that appeal. But it is what it is, and it's not that big of a deal. But it just goes to show you that you never know how things are going. The whole system just broke.
Well, I mean, a lot of these guys, you know, a lot of the content providers could really get a benefit out of shows like ours sharing that video, or you know, exposing it to more people, right? So that's the other side of this, is that you know, a lot of these content providers are missing out on promotion of their shows or their content. And I think it cuts both ways. I mean, sure, you can put a lot of control on, but it's also, there's a benefit to content providers getting exposure to what they're doing too. So
you can take the embed and put it on your site. That's what's funny, is you can take that same YouTube video and embed the entire video on your site, but you can't play it in this content.
In other shows, right?
Yeah. Right. And where you're talking about it and you're promoting it and you're providing a link back to it, you know, which is more valuable than, you know, what would be just putting it on my website. But it's beyond bizarre. All right. I want to cover two more things today before we wrap up. Jobs Act. And I covered this in my show on Thursday, but the Jobs Act is, I got mixed feelings on this thing. I'm pretty happy for a couple points. Number one, if you're a startup, you can now say, I'm looking for money within some certain rules. It used to be, as a startup, if you're looking for money, you could never, ever say, I'm looking for money publicly. That was an SEC violation, at least here in the U.S.
Unless you're going on Dragon's Den.
Solicitation. It's a solicitation clause.
You right. Can,
yeah.
So now I can solicit. So I can raise money from anyone. And this is a benefit for the general public. If you're a fan of a company, in your attempt to ask, can I invest in your company? The answer can now change from no to maybe. And the maybe is there's still some rules on qualification of the investor and so forth. There's the gag rule. The gag rules are gone, and it gives you more control over the message. And it's the lifting of the general, as you said it, Rob, the general solicitation ban for investment means that startups can advertise themselves as fundraising when they're still in very early stages. Now, that makes me wonder, okay, how do you define early stage before they have a product? So I guess if you have a product, you can't advertise that you're looking for money. And so there's some weird rules there. I got to figure that out. This means more investors, large and small, will be able to participate. Startups can take longer to start. So basically now you no longer have to go public once you've gotten 500 investors. So it's about the amount of money you make. So but basically now you can go up to 2,000 investors before you have to go public. And the most important part is the Sarbanes-Oxley reporting stuff. That is so expensive here. Basically, if you do less than $1 billion worth of revenues, you'll be able to go public without following all of the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance and disclosure regulations, at least for the first 5 years on the public market. So this, you know, this is huge. You could spend a couple $100,000 a year in the lawyers and the accountants and all that to just stay in compliance with Sarbanes-Oxley. So this is going to allow smaller companies to go IPO sooner. But the bad part of this is, you know, now we're probably going to be open to some fraud where someone's going to say, oh, I'm raising money for this certain company, and, you know, people are going to lose money. So there's going to be some some issues here. And we're going to probably see a bunch of startup sites are going to be, you know, as sites that are going to help people raise money with these new rules. But here's an interesting, CEOs can lose everything. So companies that take crowdfunding expose their officers to personal liability. They can be sued for their personal assets. For this reason, many businesses, they feel, will not open to crowdfunding rounds unless they absolutely have to. So what does that mean? If I tell you what my business model is and you invest in it and we execute that business model and fail, that you're still going to be able to sue me. That kind of negates the whole, you know, because what you're doing with a startup is you're taking some risk no matter what, that the company's going to be successful, and VCs lose money every day. Investors are going to still be in the dark. They're not going to get very much information. In other words, we're not going to have to be reporting all these financials, and probably we're going to see some more crappy IPOs resulting in companies ending up in the you know, in the penny market. But it's available today. People can get started.
So Todd, I kind of wonder if this is a reaction to the popularity of this, you know, it's kind of micro investing kind of phenomenon that's going out there where, you know, I can't remember the name of the site, but there's a site out there that you can post up an idea and get funding for, like within a 30-day window.
Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Kickstarter. Yeah. So is this a kind of a reaction to the popularity of that, I wonder?
Potentially, yeah. But, you know, with Kickstarter, the way they got around it was is you were buying a product. You were paying for a physical product over or a digital product that was being promised to you. That's how Kickstarter got around the rules.
Gotcha.
You know, the difference is when we started Raw Voice, we had many, many people email us and say, hey, we want to invest. And they were generally what I would consider to be a non-accredited investor who I really could not legally even respond to in an email saying, yeah, we'd love to have you as an investor. I could not say anything when we were doing some initial considerations of doing funding with Raw Voice and me talking to people in Silicon Valley. You know, there was, I could not publicize that I was going around. I'm in Silicon Valley. What you doing in Silicon Valley? Oh, I'm doing business. You know, if I had said, I'm trying to look for money, boom. You know, I could have been thrown in jail. And I'm not saying that we ever did look for money in Silicon Valley. Trying to, because I don't know the full rules yet, but I'm just using that as a hypothetical. So we'll see where this Jobs Act goes and where the rules lay. But I'm excited about it.
Hey, Todd, so what did you think of the big announcement that Google put out about their Glass project, or their Project Glass?
Yeah.
Just their Google goggles?
Amazing.
That's the last thing I wanted to talk about today. Did you guys see the video?
I did.
That's what I call a segue.
What did you think of the video that I can't play on the show?
I want to buy a great idea.
I think it's fantastic. I'm like, sign me up. Where do I get one?
Well, I think it's still a year or two out probably, but yeah, it's a cool idea. This augmented reality thing, I think, is really the Uber trend, you know, for the next 5 years.
And, you know, it's a Terminator come to real life, I guess. You know, we'll be able to have our heads up display. And I think it's all about implementation, how it looks, whether it really works the way they're toting it to work. If it works like that, boy, you think the transportation people had issues with people using hands-free? Wait till we have heads up and we're driving down the road.
It's called distracted living is what they should start calling it. It's not just distracted driving, it's distracted living.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess, you know, Addy, what was your most, you know, you saw that. What was your most exciting thought on it?
Well, I'm going to be upfront and honest about this. A fault of mine, I am not good with organization. And, you know, I'd be able to, because if this thing's going to be running Android or something like that, I would love to be able to beforehand go onto my desktop or laptop or whatever, say in, put in all my, you know, all my meetings in the Google Calendar, have that automatically through the cloud, pull through to the glasses. And then when I'm like, I don't know, walking down the road back to my house or something, I could have the Google Glasses on saying at a certain time to remind me, say, oh, Addy, you've got to go and, go and play poker. Things like that. It would be just really awesome for me to have that kind of system where I could see right through glasses, even like these, which I'm wearing right now, to see exactly what I need to do, what kind of reminders I have set for myself. That's what I'm really excited about. Things that will allow me to, you know, make my life easier, as it were.
Well, for me, I think that the ability to, like, if I'm in a meeting and my phone buzzes as I've got another appointment, it's kind of distracting or something to pull the phone up. But if I'm wearing it, because I wear glasses when I'm not online, if I had my glasses on and, you know, all of a sudden it says, hey, you've got a meeting in 10 minutes, another meeting, I can start doing I can start doing the wrap up of my meeting without having to have looked at my phone. Oh, I got another appointment coming up. It definitely makes some things more. I think it's going to be good. I can't wait. I will definitely be in line to buy a set of these as soon as they're available. And I'm sure this is something that will evolve over time. But, you tie that to potentially a vehicle that's going to be able to drive itself in the coming years. There's all kinds of crazy stuff here. And if you start looking at what Google's doing, I wouldn't count them out in any means by and being more innovative. I think they've got some tricks up their sleeve they're planning for, and we'll see where it leads. But who knows? You might be able to watch Geek News Central right through your glasses soon.
Yeah, and well, I think it's also going to push the envelope of getting things smaller, right? You know, the actual glasses that you would wear, the cameras and the microprocessors and the battery and all those kinds of things are going to have to get smaller and more powerful. So it's going to be interesting to see how that part of it plays out as well. I mean, because the glasses that they showed were not really glasses that were for people that have regular glasses. They kind of appeared to be for people that don't wear glasses, which is kind of an interesting kind of thing to think about. So unless those glasses, you know, that they showed in the video were possible to be added to, let's say,
a prescription,
you know, somebody that actually wears glasses, yeah. Right?
That's what I was going to say.
Or is it... Yeah, or is it going to be something that gets shown into the lens itself? It's going to be interesting to see how they actually deploy this.
Yeah, and they have glasses that you can see through. You know, heads up display stuff has been around a long time,
but it's been really big and bulky.
But I don't think they're letting anyone actually wear these things yet. So, you know, Google people are, but I want to put a pair on and see what it really looks like. You know, does it look clean? Is it up in the right corner of my vision? Where are these prompts coming from?
Well, it's probably going to come from your mobile phone is my guess. I mean, that's probably going to be the brains of the operation is going to come out of your cell phone.
And then the headset, it's just Bluetooth maybe.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or some sort of new kind of wireless technology there. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we'll see. And the sooner the better. And if Google wants to lend me some prototypes, I'd be more than happy to beta test them for them. No problem.
Yeah.
Same. Send one my way, please.
All right, guys. Well, we've been at this an hour and 13 minutes. And I don't want to take this to 2 hours like we did last week with Chris on board. So I'm going to wrap this show up, and but thanks guys for coming on, and of course Addy, where's your website again?
Yes, so you can go to www.mhftech.net. That's a place where you can find the downloads for all the shows that we do, and then we've also got links on there to the shows. We're overhauling that, and we're also. Also doing a bit of overhauling on the back end of the feed so people can get their shows downloaded a little bit faster. So, yeah, please go over there. And if you don't mind, please, we invite you to subscribe because by subscribing, you support our show.
And Rob, how about you? Of course, I know you've been putting some of your old content up on one of your flagship sites too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've got I've got two sites up, robgreenlee.com and webtalkradio.com. And I've got a bunch of old shows up there. But I can also be found on Twitter at robgreenlee.com too.
And for the podcasters out there, you can find Rob at rob@zune.net as well.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have a podcast that you want to get into the Zune catalog, shoot me an email. I'll be happy to add it.
And of course, you can. But go ahead.
I would quite like you, Rob, to help me out with that one, because I'm kind of struggling on getting into the Zune marketplace, because the more places we have, the better.
You betcha. That's the way to think about it.
Just all you got to do there, Addy, is just send Rob an email and he'll get you in. Hey, let's. Everyone, thanks for hanging out with us today on Saturday Morning Tech. There will not be a show next week. I'll be in Las Vegas for NAB. So the show schedule, I'm still working on how I'm going to do shows and do NAB next week. I'm trying to decide how that's going to happen. But we'll be bringing you content on the special media feed for NAB. It's going to be me and just a few other people are going to be out there. One of the Gadget Professor from here at Geek News Central is going to be out as well. So I don't think we're going to be pushing out a lot of content for NAB. It's going to be stuff that I find it's really super cool. So I'll have a limited number of articles. There will be our writers here at GNC. We'll be putting out a lot of announcements about press release stuff that's come out from NAB and major announcements. But I'm looking forward to seeing what the folks at NewTek, Blackmagic Design, and a variety of other companies are putting out. Matter of fact, I've got Blackmagic Design should be loving me. I'm spending right now to make this upgrade to the HD portion for the Skype machines. We got HDMI to SDI converters so we can feed the TriCaster, and I've got a couple of HDMI distribution units so that we can actually come in with one HDMI and go to, basically keep the monitor live, feed a flat screen. We're up in the game here a little bit, doing its investment in the studio, because I'm planning on making what's behind me change in the coming months. So that's a work in progress. I've kind of come up with an initial sketch on how things are going to look. We just got to see if the placement's going to work. But making some upgrades here to the studio and spending some of my advertising dollars that I earn on gear. But definitely going to go check out what they've got at NAB to see if there's anything that I should wait for. Because that's always the thing that happens. You plan for something and then you get out to the show and you're like, oh my God, look at that. And but anyway, we'll see what happens. Guys, thanks for hanging out. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, very quickly. Speaking of that, I hope you don't mind me doing this, but I wanted to put this out there to not just my audience who will see this you'll see a show on my side, if you don't mind, that is. I want to put this out to everyone. It's a very costly business, as you know. I'm running my shows and you running your shows, as you know. And again, if you go to the to my site for my shows, mhftech.net, only if you can, you can click on the donate button to donate any money you want. And of course, if you don't have a PayPal account, you can fill out your details and everything will sort itself out. I'd appreciate that. Thanks very much.
All right, guys. I think that's it for today. Rob, Addy, take care. And we'll see you next go around.
Okay. See you later.
Yep.
Good evening, everyone.